Mike Mulligan.
Bears, 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 football, football, football.
You know what? I'd like to say you're wrong, Molly, but you're not wrong very often.
David Haw.
That was one of the best questions you've ever asked.
Yeah, I'm sure it's going to get an answer just as good.
Chicago Sports Talk for your morning on 670 The Score.
Let's go.
Molly and Haw. Remix. It's Gabe Ramirez, Ruthie Polinsky in the building hanging out with you guys. We even got two new producers, Tyler Farrengaw. We got Alex Kuhn in the building. What's up, gentlemen?
What's going on, Gabe? Hey, Tyler's been here like for the last 3 weeks. I'm the new one here.
I feel like Tyler and I have worked together nonstop. We kind of hang out. But, you know, so Ruthie, you're in good hands with these two. I know you've worked with them as well, but this should be no different. How are you feeling today? No, not yet. We're going to get you on, though. You turned on the wrong microphone. There you go. That's the one.
I'm like a rookie. Like, what is going on?
Well, who puts two microphones right next to each other?
But why is it? It's on the wrong side. That's not.
No.
That makes,
if you look to
really?
If you look to your left, there's another microphone there. Yeah. So then the left
Brilliant.
Will go that way.
The right. I promise I'm smart, everyone.
It's 5:30 in the morning. I don't expect anything
it's
less.
It's like yet. I've literally filled it on this show like more than any other show, too. And I've sat in this chair. It's like, this is not my first show. Good morning, everyone.
We're going to blame the producers. Don't worry about it.
It's my fault. Sorry, guys.
Happy last day of 2024.
I know.
That's crazy.
See you next year, as some people would say on a day like this, if they want to see you tomorrow. Are you a big New Year's Eve celebrator? Like, has it evolved over the years? Is it pretty consistent? How is it for
you? Used to be a thing, right? Like, obviously, younger. Now it's like, good night. I'm going to bed. Especially after doing this show today.
Yeah, especially
good night.
After this one.
Sweet dreams. See you tomorrow. See you next year.
I asked my wife. I was like, and we haven't even talked about it. That's how you know we're on a different planet right now.
Yes, right.
Yesterday, I'm like, we're making dinner. And I'm like, hey, babe, what do we want to do for the new year? We got two kids. She's like, I don't know. I haven't thought about it yet. So years past, we've actually woke up our kids at midnight.
Oh, that's cute.
Because they go to bed at 8. You know, you kind of wake them up. And then we have like
a little,
you know, something in the house and take your ass back to bed, you know, kind of a thing. That's if we wake up and we're fortunate. But, you know, back in the day, it used to be something different. You know,
right?
Did you back in the
day?
Party?
Thing, I mean, listen, I'm talking about back in the day. I went to dinner with my husband last year, and then I think we were up at midnight, and then we were asleep shortly after.
A little smooch at midnight.
If that. I'll be in bed asleep.
I mean, the new year, you know, especially this time of year with sports, you kind of know what you're inundated with. You know, you're watching sports nonstop over the last week and a half, especially now that the NFL has taken over.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Christmas is a holiday. Favorite sports to watch around this time? Are you in on college football in the playoffs, or is NFL just kind of, you know, you zoned in on that?
I'm in on the college football stuff. This is exciting. I think it's new and different. The playoff, it's cool. It's going to be interesting to see kind of how it all plays out. But NFL is king. Always say that. I got in a big argument with David Haw the other day about how awesome it was to have football on a Wednesday.
Probably was like a friendly argument between the two of you.
And Haw was like, yeah, like, no, NBA, that's their day. And I'm like, I know you're an NBA guy. I was like, I was watching football all day and it was awesome.
Yeah.
Like on a Wednesday.
It was.
I was so happy.
It's like you can tune into an NFL game and just get lost because you just feel like you're watching awesomeness.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, I don't get too many of these throughout the year. This is finally here. But the NBA should have, I saw someone say the NBA should have pivoted and did something on Christmas Eve.
Oh,
where Christmas Day is your day, but the NFL doesn't say, you know, we have a day and then that's it. They put it wherever.
Interesting.
They throw it wherever they want.
I know.
And I think the NBA could have taken a page out of their playbook and done something on Christmas Eve because nothing was on Christmas Eve.
Listen, they lived up to it because there were some great games, right? Some great NBA games on Christmas Day. So good for them, right? But I thought the whole Netflix thing was awesome. Like, I thought the production looked good. I thought the talent was good. I mean, the games were, you know, but it's teams that you want to watch.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the halftime show.
And Beyonce.
Talking about production.
Oh, yeah. Beyonce.
I was in on
Queen.
That.
I mean, that was a Super Bowl performance.
I was trying to, okay, I'm so glad you said that, Ruthie, because I was trying to tell people, I'm like, do you understand you got a Beyonce halftime show?
Literally.
In the middle of the season? Like, that's not, like, this was huge. And they brought out Post Malone, Shaboozy. Like,
I know. It was awesome.
That was.
It looked so good. She literally came in on a horse. Like,
Now, here's what I'm thinking. I hear rumors often that the Super Bowl halftime show, they don't get paid for that, right? It's like publicity, etc. Beyonce on Netflix.
She got paid.
She got paid.
She
you
did.
Know she got paid.
I saw she got paid.
Oh, you saw how
I
much?
I don't know if, I, listen, no, you no, never no. know what you read anymore, but like half, 20 mil.
That's what I'm saying.
That's what I thought I saw. Of don't quote
they,
me on that.
Of course they did.
Could be fake
they
news.
Took all of the, they took all of Florida and they said, all right, all you subscribers are paying for Beyonce to be for this month. Your fees are going towards Beyonce.
Yeah.
It was incredible. I mean, good show, but NFL certainly did a great job there. Good games. And, you know, now this week, leading into this final week of the season, it's led to some interesting storylines when you're looking at the NFL. I mean, obviously, Christmas Day, we were able to see dominance in the form of Patrick Mahomes. But this tail end of the playoffs is getting kind of interesting, Ruthie. When you're looking at, you know, wild cards and positioning, obviously, Vikings, Lions going to be playing for an interesting game. Did you catch that one yesterday? Niners and Lions.
Yes, I was up late watching it because I didn't want to turn it off. I know. The fact that the Vikings and the Lions are playing for the number one seed and the division in the last week of the season is why I love this sport. Like, it is electric. I love that there's a game there's going to be so much at stake. There's so much on the line. And we'll get into this, but I don't know who wants to come coach in this division. I'm serious.
It quickly became a division that was heavy in every area, right? Not just coaching. You're talking about quarterbacks, running backs, defenses. I mean, it's a good division, but you're right. To come coach here, You got to be asking for some sort of death wish if you want this kind. Not only the problems with the Bears, but problems in the NFC North.
I mean, best wishes to whoever comes here. And not to mention you're in one of the greatest sports cities in the country, just in terms of the coverage and the fan bases and the attention you get. And the pressure is going to be to win now, next year. So good luck when you got to play those three teams twice a year.
But maybe the narrative will be, Ruthie, that, you know, the next coach that comes in, they'll give him the same storyline that they gave Caleb. This will be the best situation any head coach has ever walked into.
Can you believe it? You believe we said that? They're going to win four games this year.
She's Ruthie Polinsky. I'm Gabe Ramirez here filling in for Mully and Hahn, 670 The Score. New Year's Eve edition. I mean, it is going to be, it is painful when you're thinking about what this coaching search should look like, especially because it seems like the Bears have no clear direction. What once was a clear direction, leader of men, is now...
Don't get me started on leader of men.
I feel like people chuckle at that now.
They've backed off of that.
Hold on. They have turned away from
they don't
that.
Want leaders of men.
They hold want on. Leaders of men that can't...
It's such,
can,
a, it's such a stupid term.
What
right
happens,
now.
What happens when the female trainer comes in the room? Do you not lead her?
That's a
also,
great question.
Oh, you have a female on your coaching staff. Are you not leading when she comes in? I get very upset about this leader of men. To be an NFL coach, you need to be a leader. I understand what they're saying is that you want maybe a motivator, a bite your kneecaps kind of person. But that phrase, leader of men, it's meaningless to me.
Like, it's total projection of the Bears in the past just hiring yes men, it feels like. We got to bring in an ass kicker because in the past we just brought in whoever.
Well, guys, you got to remember, look, you brought in Shane Waldron, you brought in Eberflus, you brought in Trestman, you brought in guys that are agreeable.
Yeah,
right? Exactly.
And so when they say, so to your
non-confrontational.
Point, non-confrontational guys. When we say leader of men, I think it's an overused phrase. And I do think they mean men is like a overarching term as opposed to just men and not women. But I think that when they say that, it is more so like, guys, we're not going to let you buy into or let you believe all the hype that Chicago throws on you, because it happens often, right? Oh, you're Roma Dunze. Roma Dunze is going to have 1,000 yards. Of course he is. How? He has Keenan Allen and DJ Moore in front of him. Don't matter. It's Roma Dunze. He's playing for the Bears. He's great. This is what we do, right? And so Roma Dunze, not that he's feeling himself, but players as a whole tend to do that. So when they say leader of men, someone that could chop these guys down and be like, no, you need to, you still messed up over here. That needs to get fixed. This isn't being performed at a high level. You got to do that well.
Gabe,
also,
what gives you the confidence that this Bears brass is going to hire someone of that personality that's going to call people out, make people feel uncomfortable, make people hold themselves accountable for their own actions? Like, I just don't envision that taking place. The one thing that I think is interesting in this mix, and I don't know if it's a good or a bad thing yet. I don't think any of us do, but Kevin Warren's role in this and his maybe desire to win is something we don't really have full picture for yet. Like, how willing is he to stray away from what the Bears have done for literally a century? You know, like, how willing is he to say, we're going to hire someone that's going to make everyone in this building feel uncomfortable and no one is safe? Like, I hope that happens, because I think that's how you win in this day and age. You look around the league, I think Kevin O'Connell's a really interesting personality. I would love to know sort of more about what he's like in front of the team in a meeting room. Is he calling people out? Because he looks like a guy that's just, you know, this sort of, but I mean, Matt LaFleur, Brian Flores, who I covered in Miami. I mean, these are people that, like, you know, Mike Vrabel, they're calling people out. Like, I think that's what this group, this team needs. I think they also need an offensive whiz, and they also need a lot of things on the roster.
A lot of check marks.
A lot of things to fill, but I think if you want to sort of set the tone and change the way that this team has visualized, quote-unquote, winning, because you've been losing, I think you need to do something different.
Yeah, I think that, you know, when you're talking about calling people out, there's the proper way to do that, where you can, in front of the media, say all the right things. Hey, it's on me. I didn't put the team in a position to succeed. And then behind closed doors, tap that guy on the shoulder and say, hey, we got to do better. And here are the things that we need to do. Mm-hmm. I think that's what players love about coaches in that respect, where they do not mind taking it from them because they know how to handle and play that game. I think the Bears themselves, the person who they're looking for, Ruthie, is the person that is coming into that interview room, like, telling them what they need. You know, like, you can go into an interview and answer questions. I was like, the Bears need the person that's coming in and not only is telling them what they need, but is passionate and is about wanting to implement that, right? So they come in the door and say, like, what have you guys been doing over here? This is what needs to happen. Like, that kind of a person, instead of just somebody, how's it going? Thanks for interviewing me. I appreciate the opportunity. Nah, not that guy. They need the one that's coming in the door, kicking the door, waving the foot forward.
But like, how do you think a George McCaskey, a Ryan Poles would receive that?
Again, I think that they want love and passion, right? It's like they have not abandonment issues, but they have anxious attachment association, where they need someone to shower them with love and let them know that they want to be here. See, that's what I think. So if you're coming in with fire and passion, but at the same time you're putting this vision together that I want this team to win, I am passionate about the Bears, I don't come in with this passion in every office that I walk into. It is this one specifically. I am up for the challenge of turning the organization around. I am going to be the one that's going to do this. Like, that kind of speak is what the Bears need. And I think that would win somebody over regardless of the organization.
I hope you're right.
Yeah. Isn't that what you want? That's what I would want.
That's what I think everyone wants. I think everyone wants something done differently now. I just don't have a ton of confidence or faith that this Bears brass is going to go that direction.
Yeah, I get it, because everything else has gone wrong, you know. But if I'm supposed to listen to Ryan Poles and Kevin Warren, that the past of the Chicago Bears isn't going to affect the present or the future, right? They're going to do things differently. If I am to believe them, then I have to think that, you know.
Why would you believe them is my question.
Because I'm a foolish Bears fan that loves the Bears and hopes that they'll get it right, because there's new people making the decisions, right? The McCaskies, granted, are at the top saying they want Ryan Poles as the point man, saying that they want Kevin Warren in the room. But ultimately, the people making or the people swaying the decisions are different. And so that's why I have faith, because they are different people than the Bears organization has had in the past when making these decisions. But damn, Shane Waldron, Eberflus, Allen, I mean, like, it's a bad hiring practice with the people that are here. But again, don't you think that coaches are out there like a Pete Carroll, that they say to themselves, damn, I could fix that?
Oh, for sure. For sure. I don't know if the Bears want that. That's my, I don't know if they want to be told what they've done wrong. That's just sort of my feeling. I think they are, you know, wanting someone who is aligned with their vision. That vision hasn't panned out. So it's just going to be interesting, Gabe. And I think we'll get into this more in pick six. But I understand that this is, there's sort of this narrative that this is a pitch to come coach. There has to be a pitch of why you want to come coach here. Obviously, you have the quarterback. You have a lot of the skill. But you're in a tough division. There are a lot of things to fix. And the track record for this organization is not good.
And have you seen the Bears' opponents for next year? Like, yeah, it doesn't get easier.
It's a slog fest. I mean, it's going to be brutal. And honestly, the worst part of it is the division, right? Like, yeah, that's going to be the worst. And then, oh, by the way, also some tough opponents, like at home and on the road,
yeah,
that aren't in your division.
I mean, you got to have, you know, solid quarterback play, right? I mean, the defense, granted, it's taken a turn. I don't know if you saw the stats. Eric Washington, 32nd in the league since taking over at every category. That's wild. I mean, you knew it, but that's
even
wild.
After Seattle, huh?
Even after Seattle.
6 points.
6 points holding the team. Still get that same thing, which is unreal. But, I mean, obviously there's a lot of things to fix. But, you know, you're looking at teams that are middle of the road, right? And those that have, you know, more wins than four in the NFL. And at some point or another, their quarterback has stepped up and won them some games. Right. And I think that that's what been the biggest issue for the Chicago Bears is, like, you know, the offense, not just Caleb, but, you know, the offense as a whole, not stepping up just even a little bit to put a couple of points on the board so that way the Bears can be in a better predicament. But the coach is certainly going to have to change that. It's going to be a tough climb for whoever, you know, is put in that position. And there's just so many names out there. The problem is there are also so many teams that need head coaches outside of the Chicago Bears. And I think
we don't even know yet. You know, there are going to be some firings and some surprises, and there are every year. So that'll be interesting to talk to Mike Florio about, too, about, you know, sort of maybe what are the surprises.
Of course.
You know, brewing. But I man, good luck.
If you're a coach or if you're one. Because
if you're the Bears.
Like, if Ben, like Ben Johnson, like, I don't necessarily love a Ben Johnson. It's not my number one choice in my brain.
Oh, interesting. I would have pinned you as a Ben Johnson guy.
No. Okay. No. I spent like the last two nights watching his midweek press conferences just to kind of see, you know, kind of guy he is behind the mic.
Yeah. Okay. Did you see him get fired up last night when they did the trick play? Listen, I'm with you. I would love to see someone like a Mike Vrabel, Brian Flores, someone who comes in and just gets everyone in line. I would love to see that.
Yeah.
I've sort of been more like, I've been warming up to Ben Johnson a bit here. I just think he's got some fire to him, and he's obviously been working under a Dan Campbell, seeing how he's able to motivate his players. So I do think there's hopefully some of that in him. But how is Jalen Johnson going to respond to Ben Johnson getting up in front of the room? How is a Tremaine Edmonds or a TJ Edwards?
I mean, Montez Sweat.
A Montez Sweat, right. Like, those are the sort of the questions I have. But I will say that some of this, like, sideline reactionary, like, emotional video I've seen of Ben Johnson is leaning me more in that direction. Yeah. So
he's too likable.
Is he a leader of humans?
Yeah, like that better. A leader of humans. I look at, you know what it is? I have an issue with coordinators that come from really good situations.
Mm.
Right? If you're the offensive coordinator of Buffalo, Joe Brady, if you're the offensive coordinator of Kansas City, Matt Nagy, if you're the offensive coordinator of the Detroit Lions, Ben Johnson, it's like, well, damn, there's some really good teams in place. So we know what it's like. Ask Saquon Barkley what it feels like to be on a good team and how much your productivity increases when you have a good offensive line and they don't put eight in the box. Like, things like that matter. And I think when you're talking about Ben Johnson, he has a ton of weapons. I mean, Jameson Williams was a stud in college. We were talking about college, stud in college. He's like an afterthought on their team in terms of, you know, offensive weapons. Sam Laporta, the running back situation, the offensive line is incredible. So to take Ben Johnson to put him over here and expect the same results with this team, I think we're setting ourselves up for a bit of a disaster with something like that.
I hear you. I mean, where does Ben Johnson end and the offensive line start?
Right.
Where does Jared Goff start and Ben Johnson end? I mean, those are the questions that you have to ask. And I don't think anyone's going to have an answer. And I also think there are other situations, Jacksonville, that might be a little bit more
Easy.
And guess what? Jacksonville's going to pay him.
AFC South? Sure. Why not? Be over there for 5 years?
Bro, you watch those games, it's like, I'm going there.
Yes.
I'm going to win there. And they have a quarterback, and they have some good pieces in place.
Brian Thomas Jr. is good. Yeah. I mean, they got a good situation over there. That's what I'm saying. I don't know. And then something about, like, okay, here's a question for you. What did you think about Ben Johnson going back to the Detroit Lions last year as opposed to challenging himself and taking a head coach?
There was something fishy about that whole thing and sort of the way he led everyone to believe he was going to take that job, pulled out last minute. I think there was some family part of it. And there was also some, I might want to try and win here for a little. I'm getting the playoff check. I'm trying to go to the Super Bowl, you know, like, let me try and do that here for a little bit. I'm comfortable.
See, that's not the kind of coach I want. That's why I asked the question.
I hear you.
Like, if you're going back, taking the path of least resistance, you're like, I know I got a Super Bowl shot, so I'm going to be over here. Nah, I don't want to take the challenges. Let's ride this one out.
Yeah.
It's like, what? No.
And I hear you too. I mean, I think there's a part of it. There's probably a little bit of ego and arrogance that every coach should have, right? If you're getting to this point, but there are 32 jobs.
Yes.
In the world to be an NFL head coach. And those opportunities don't always come up. For him to go back and say, I'm confident that I'm going to have this opportunity again, there are pros and cons to that.
There's certainly things that you could think about. Well, I'm sure his name, Ben Johnson, will be said a lot throughout the show today. Of course, she is Ruthie Polinsky. I am Gabe Ramirez, filling in for Mully and Hall today. We got a great show lined up for you guys. Ton of guests to get to today. Of course, Brad Biggs hanging out with us at 7. The coach, Dave Wannstedt, will be here at 7:40 in studio. Handle two segments with us. We'll get to Mike Florio, as Ruthie mentioned, at 8:45. Then Jared Payton, by the time you finish your workout or dropping off the kids, you can check him out at 9 o'clock here on 670 Score. Also want to remind you guys that later today, our girl, Alyssa Bergamini, I saw the tweet. She's going to be doing the broadcast. You saw that?
Whoa!
Yes, she'll be doing the broadcast on TNT today, which is going to be really
cool. Oh, it's
cool.
Awesome.
So shout out to Alyssa Bergamini. But before that, Circus Sports Illinois invites you to join the Score at Trace in Wrigleyville today. It's going to be happening from 2 to 6 p.m. Lawrence Holmes, Layla Rahimi, they're going to be broadcasting live before the Winter Showdown on New Year's Eve, celebrating the Outdoor Hockey Classic between the Blackhawks and St. Louis. That's Trace in Wrigleyville again today from 2 to 6. It's all brought to you by Circus Sports Illinois, sports betting the way it should be. I did one of these live broadcasts before, Illinois versus Northwestern at Wrigleyville. And it's so funny because, you know, as a Chicagoan, you're just used to seeing Cubs stuff over there, you know?
Right.
And then maybe you go for a concert or two. But then to see some other teams' gear all scattered throughout Wrigley is
sick. It's cool. Did you see that there was a cool photo I saw last night? The Blackhawks logo is like being flashed on to Wrigley.
Oh, really?
Like the outside and like this cool lighting and there's the NHL logo, Blackhawks logo, like outside of Wrigley. It's really cool.
Are you a outside, like a 30 degree weather game person?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
I'll stick it out.
You don't mind? Long johns and a sweater?
Yeah, I went to Michigan. I worked in Rhode Island. I've been all over.
So you know how to handle
it. I'm a winter girly. I like a season, you know?
Well, we're going to see how you handle the pick six as well. All right, coming up in just a little bit, we got to keep things kind of kosher for our guys, Mully and Hall. You know, 6 o'clock every day to give you the biggest six storylines. We get an opportunity to dissect them right here on 670 The Score. So make sure you're here to join the conversation. All right, she is Ruthie Polinsky. I am Gabe Ramirez. Pick six coming up next right here on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
All right, guys, what did you make of Thomas Brown saying that there was no discussion on sitting Caleb Williams or any of the healthy starters? Is this what you would do?
Absolutely. I think everyone needs to play. I'm actually excited that the veterans are going to be playing as well. That means a lot to the team. And, you know, these guys do want to win a football game. Thomas Brown, during his press conference, when I forgot the reporter, I don't know who the reporter was, said that nothing was at stake. He did not like that comment. He's like, football's at stake. A win is at stake. Now, we're not going to the playoffs, but something's at stake, certainly.
I think it was Potsy.
Was it Potsy? Oh, sorry, Potsy. But one other thing is at play here, right? When you're talking about Caleb Williams and his need to be on the field, his need to have reps, his need to focus on the small things, like Thomas Brown would say, when you're comparing him to a guy like Bo Nix, I'll give you college passing attempts. I know Bo Nix has more than anyone else ever, but Caleb Williams had 1,099 attempts in college. You know how many Bo Nix had? 1,900.
Wow.
In 36, almost double, right? When you're talking about time on task, this is something that NFL coaches speak of often. You have to give Caleb Williams every opportunity he can to get there. Listen, he's withstood 67 sacks. He can withstand a couple more, right? When you're talking about how it's held up on his body. But you want to see him get playing time. You want to see him, even though it's going to be in an offense that's going to be completely different from next year, you still want him to deal with adversity. And then, more importantly, outside of the division, let's not forget, every team he faces in the NFL, he's facing that defensive coordinator and that defense for the first time, right? Now he gets the opportunity to see the Packers again. And you do want to see what that body of work looks like when he's facing a top-tier team, specifically looking for some seeding into the playoffs.
Yeah, I've seen enough. I'm tired of seeing the offensive line confused on who to block. I'm tired of seeing some of the skill position players either making business decisions or not knowing where to line up or when to get their feet set so you don't get an illegal shift penalty or the play call's not coming in on time because the play callers are gone. I'm just tired of seeing it all. And if he takes another huge hit and they get hurt, he gets hurt in this final game, it's kind of perpetuating the cycle of seeing number one picks going to terrible teams and getting hurt because they're...
That's just a cynic in you, Alex. That's just a cynic in you.
I know.
Let the boy play.
But it was the shot that he took from Jonathan Greenard in the Minnesota game where I was done. And then you see Braxton Jones get hurt and you see Larry Borum and Jake Kurhan protecting his blind side. And I would start everybody else except for Caleb Williams.
Completely disagree. Couldn't disagree with you more, Alex. Same. Love ya. But here's the issue. Caleb's reps, to what you were saying, are the most important part. Obviously, his health is very important, but his reps and going up against these teams at Green Bay, you're going to tell me you don't want Caleb Williams to get a meaningless rep of a game at Lambeau Field, somewhere he's going to have to play every single year for hopefully his entire career. You need that experience in order to say you've done it, you've learned from it, you're growing from it. And I understand the health and the offensive line, and we're going to get into this more, but Caleb Williams plays a part in preserving his health. And he plays a part in learning how not to take sacks. And that is going to be the number one thing that I'm looking for this week, because probably 5 of the 7 last week were on him. And this is an area that you need to see him get better at and get better at quickly. I would prefer for it to happen this year rather than next year, hopefully, when they're playing for something.
First, I ask questions.
The voice there you heard, of course, Caleb Williams. What does he need to most to succeed next season? Is it a stronger offensive line or an innovative offensive coordinator? After being sacked a league-leading 67 times this season, which of these improvements would have the biggest impact on his future?
All right. Just want to remind you guys, Gabe Ramirez, Ruthie Polinsky, filling in for Mully and Hall here on 670 The Score. And you can catch Ruthie weekdays on the Big Pro Football Show on CHSN. Make sure you check her out. We'll be on that station at 7 a.m. All right. This is a great question, right? Like, I understand he needs both. That's the answer, right? But which one does he need more? Like, which one can he succeed with or without? I'm going to say offensive line. Do I want an offensive coordinator? Sure, but we've learned those rotate out of teams too quickly, right? If you get a good offensive coordinator this year, what happens if he becomes a head coach and he's gone, right? And now you got to find another offensive coordinator, right? That's why you need an offensive-minded head coach that's leaning in that direction. But offensive line is it. Did you see Sam Darnold against the Green Bay Packers? That man had an orb around him. not getting touched. When you're looking at those kind, when you look at Detroit Lions and Jared Goff, this man, all first, second, third round, but whatever it is, these guys have nothing but time. I would love to see what a Bears quarterback looks like when he has a top, high-end offensive line. Like, plays? I trust Caleb Williams. Give me an offensive line, and I feel like he can do it. To me, do I want a great offensive coordinator? Yes. Would I prefer an elite offensive line? Without question.
This is a tough one to me because they obviously need both, but the answer to me is the offensive coordinator because of a couple things. One of the things that Ruthie said was some of these sacks are on Caleb Williams, and that's true because he's not getting rid of the ball a lot of times when guys are open. That absolutely is happening, and a new offensive coordinator is going to help give him options to get the ball out quicker, and we saw it a little bit at times from Thomas Brown when he took over as offensive coordinator. The other thing is the offensive line is it's the personnel's not good, but it's also not all the personnel. This is a disjointed operation right now. You see guys not knowing who to block, you both in the run and the pass game, and all kinds of confusion with that unit that I do believe would be cleaned up with a good offensive coordinator. So give me the offensive coordinator first, and then we'll rebuild this offensive line if I'm making the decisions for the Bears.
You need both. It's no question. And this is why the Ben Johnson situation, I think, is so intriguing, because you could potentially have the play caller as your head coach and you're not worried about him leaving, right? Like, that's the perk. What David Haw says, and I love this and I steal it from him, is, you know, don't worry about dealing with success until you have it, right? Mm. Like, just win first and then you can figure out the rest, right? Like, let's just get this train rolling here for a second. But what my answer to the question is I think I'm with you, Alex. I think they need an offensive play caller that can scheme up an offense that allows for your offensive line to have success, the quarterback to have success. And yes, he needs time in the pocket, but there are times that Caleb Williams has a lot of time and he's not getting rid of it.
It's a great point.
So you need someone that can coach him up, coach up Caleb, coach an offense that works for the quarterback, that works for the talent you have on the offensive line. But what's interesting about the Ben Johnson thing as well is, what is Ben Johnson without the Lions offensive line? And what is the Lions offensive line without Ben Johnson? We don't know.
It's a great point.
So there's so much unknown. I lean toward it's really hard to find good offensive linemen. It may be an okay situation if you can develop the offensive linemen and you can coach a scheme that works to your players' talents.
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, if I had the answer, I would have already fixed it.
All right, well, you heard Thomas Brown right there. What are your thoughts on him saying that the sacks hold shared accountability? Is this the first time the quarterback has been called out publicly by someone in the building? Does it mean anything at all?
Does it mean anything? No, absolutely not. If I'm Caleb Williams, and I know this is my third offensive coordinator, then my second head coach, I know half my team has mailed it in. No, doesn't mean anything. Is it good that we're hearing it? Sure. Shared accountability. Sure. I would love a little more direct at Caleb. Like, yes, he is holding the ball too long. In the press conference, they asked Thomas Brown, you know, what he would tell Caleb to focus on in the future. And he said the little things, right? Starting small, starting with the cadence, starting with the pre-snap movement, starting with those things, and then focusing on getting the ball out on time. When's the last time you saw a three-step drop from Caleb Williams and a release? Five-step drop and a release. You don't see that too often. So, I mean, I'm glad that they said something. You hear people mentioning it often. I mean, look, man, if you come in here as Caleb Williams, I've been thinking about this. You come in as Caleb Williams, you're feeling swaggy. You're the number one pick. You've been anointed the savior of the Bears organization. You're trying to put a light, jovial feel to the team that has been so down and dark over the years. Yeah, nobody really wanted to kill the kid's joy from the very beginning, and I understand why. He was the only semblance of light in that Bears locker room in the last couple of seasons. So I understood it. Do you have to, from the beginning, start off with an everybody got to earn their job? Yes. I think that's what the Bears ultimately messed up. Instead of, you know, trading Justin Fields immediately to make Caleb feel better, to do all these things to make him feel better, I still think you have to play the game. Even though he's going to be the anointed one, you still got to play the game. And I think that would have set you up for better. But, you know, accountability, again, he's like 22. He just turned 23. Like, give the kids some break. Give the kids some slack. I think he'll be better next year. He talks about how good this losing is for him. And I do think it is. I think sometimes you have to go, Thomas Brown talks about, you got to go through disasters in order to find out who you are as a man. And I think Caleb Williams going through it in real time.
None of this is new. I think back to the draft process when everybody was anointing him, or not everybody, but you heard the comparisons to Patrick Mahomes and just the ridiculous expectations. But people that watched him at USC would tell you, he's got to get rid of the ball. He holds onto the ball too long. And that's something that you have to coach rookie gunslinger quarterbacks out of. This was going to be an adjustment period no matter what. And it makes it even worse when immediately he loses his offensive coordinator 9 weeks into the season and his head coach. So that is part of the sack total right now, him holding onto the ball at times. When you watch Caleb Williams, you see three things pretty much every game. You see the throws that he makes where you're like, well, there may be one or two other guys on the planet that can make this throw. You see guys around him very confused. And you see times where guys are open and he's holding on to the ball, which is definitely concerning, but not something that is all that unexpected for him as a rookie. And certainly with his coaching staff in a state of just total dysfunction the way it has been this year.
How many times am I going to have to learn and hear the word cadence, and that the Bears are still working on that, and that Caleb's still working on it? Like, that's mini camp, training camp, rookie mini camp. What's the issue here? Like, why can't they figure this out? Also, Cole Kmet yesterday talking about they can't even, the operation is a mess, so they can't even evaluate what else needs work. That, to me, is the most sort of damning thing we can say in week 18. At this point, evaluating this offense. I think Thomas Brown coming out to answer the question, Thomas Brown saying the sacks hold shared accountability. He said that you look at the offense, you look at the sack number, and a lot of people just point fingers at the offensive line, and that's not always true. That, to me, is the most Caleb Williams has publicly been called out by someone of authority to the public really all year. And I think that says a lot about Thomas Brown. It says a lot about who he would maybe be as a coach one day, because I do think he'll have that opportunity at some point. I think it means, I hope that Caleb Williams was receptive to it. And I think hopefully we can see what he learned from sort of that call out this week. Get the ball out quick. Get the play call in. Don't take 38 seconds between getting hit in the throat and getting to the line of scrimmage, getting to the playoff, and make your coach call a timeout because you can't get the play in. And if you need the timeout, call it. You're the quarterback. You can do that if you get hurt and no one saw it. So there needs to be some more public accountability when it comes to the quarterback. I think this is, it's week 18. You're not a rookie really anymore, right? Like, You got to be held accountable just the same way that the offensive line, I'm sure, is being held accountable when they're missing their blocks and they're missing their assignments. So I think it says a lot to me more about Thomas Brown and sort of the guts and maybe the way that he would hold people accountable as a head coach one day. And so I liked hearing that from Thomas Brown.
Oh, boy, that's a tough question.
That the voice of our 7 o'clock guest, Brad Biggs, despite the Bears' continued struggles and history of losing seasons, the fan base remains remarkably loyal. What is it about this team that keeps fans so invested? And does the organization risk alienating that loyalty if progress isn't made soon?
It's the history. It's the city. This is a Bears town. It always will be.
Bears.
It always will be. And that's what's so tragically beautiful about this place.
Well said, Ruthie. Well said.
It's, I mean, I worked in Boston, covered the Patriots during the end of the Brady dynasty. I've worked in Texas, sort of covered the Cowboys. Like, I've seen great sports cities. There is nothing like Chicago.
What? Tell me more.
Because the team is bad.
Oh.
Like, it's cool to root for Tom Brady when you're going to the Super Bowl every other year. Like, that's easy. This is hard.
We love misery, you know?
And I love that about this city. Yeah. I love that about this fan base. I love it about this market. I don't think the fans are going anywhere. I mean, to see the way that the fans stuck it out in the rain on a Thursday night, the score is 6-3. Like, that was pretty cool. It wasn't that cold, so don't give them too much credit. It was a little, you know, 40s. But no, I think this is what... I don't think the Bears need to worry about attendance. I think they should build a stadium. Kevin Warren, where you been? Got to work on that. It's almost 2025 now. So I think there are things they can do to get fans more excited. And the first thing they can do is win. But I don't think this fan base is going anywhere.
Yeah, build the stadium, get the coaching hire right. Seems so simple,
right?
Yet nobody has faith that at least the second part of that is going to happen. This is the biggest football market in the country, as Olin Krutz pointed out. New York has two teams, LA has two teams, Chicago with one team is the biggest football market in the country, and it's a football-crazed town. And at this point, it's such an interesting juncture because I agree with Ruthie. I don't think that the attendance is going to drop anytime soon, but if... say next year they get off to a 0-4 start and look bad, you're going to see opposing fans in the stands. You're going to see more Green Bay fans. You're going to see more Detroit fans early in the season. And it's just, it's so such a weird point for the organization because everybody in the whole city knows exactly what's wrong with the team and what they could do to fix it. Yet nobody has any faith that they're going to do the thing that they need to do to fix it. So I am genuinely curious to see how this coaching search goes and what the reaction from that is and how that carries over into 2025.
The fan base that is remarkably loyal. That is Chicago, isn't it? We are. We hate everything. But if we love you, if we love something, we will love it forever. And we will love it wholeheartedly. The thing with Bears and Bulls and Cubs is that there is only a finite amount of seats at these games, right? And there are 8-9 million people in the Chicagoland area. So, you know, if 30,000 people can't make it to a Cubs game, there is another tier of Cubs fans that will go, right? And if that's for the Bears, like tier one, and then those people can't go, and then they give it to, like, you know, their employees or something like that, and then they can't go, and guess what, there's another tier of people below them because they give it to their friends, and guess what, below them there is another tier of people that have never been to the Bears game before, that have never been to a Bulls game before, and they take these opportunities and they know this is their chance. When the Bears are bad, when tickets are cheap, when you could spend $70 on your way to Soldier Field to watch this team, that's why you see
dinner theater crowd at the Bears games.
We talked about this, Alex. Dinner theater with the Bulls. I said last year,
the last 3 years.
Ruthie, I would tell anybody, I'm like, look, the Bulls might not win, but they are one of the most entertaining teams in the NBA.
100%.
They will find a way to do that. And
it's a great atmosphere every game at the United Center.
It's amazing. They do a fantastic job out there.
Unbelievable.
So why are we so invested? We love the pain and the agony. Does the organization risk alienating the loyalty if progress isn't made soon? No, because no team in Chicago, except for the White Sox, has an empty stadium because they're not performing well. No one. And it has been that way, so there's no reason for me to bet on something like that.
I mean, we got our ass kicked. If I knew, it wouldn't have happened. That's a BS question, man.
That was Matt LaFleur. After watching the entire NFC North slate this weekend, does it impact your opinion on how attractive the Bears head coaching job may be? Three teams are going to be very good for a very long time.
Yeah, it's interesting when you talk about, like, if you think about Russell Wilson last year, a lot of people were like, you sure you want to go to that division? You sure you want to play there? Even when he went to Denver, They thought the same thing. You want to play in the same division as Patrick Mahomes? You want a young Justin Herbert? These are the things that coaches have to think about also, right? Do you want to go into that division where three teams have double-digit victories? Again, you don't know what the Lions are going to look like without Ben Johnson. Minnesota proved that, you know, despite the quarterback position, they could still perform at a high level with the weapons that they have. And Green Bay, with their coach-quarterback combination, they're going to be around too. So, yeah, this is not a fun. You heard Kevin Warren say, this is the most attractive job in the NFL. Is it? With the high-pitched voice. Is it? Is it really the most attractive position? I don't know. Ask some other coaches what they really think about that. It's tough. It's tough. That's why I said you need the guy that's going to walk in the room and demand the job. Not the guy that's going through the coaching carousel at all these teams that are looking. No, the guy that said, I understand that I've interviewed for these other places, but here is where I want to be. This is the organization that I want to turn around. This is the challenge that I want to take. And then hopefully if you get that guy, you lock the door, you get a blank check, and you give him whatever he wants, that way he can turn your organization around.
Yeah, it's tough because you obviously see the parts of the job that look appealing, but hearing Kevin Warren say that this is the most appealing job in the league feels a lot like hearing people say that Caleb Williams is coming into the best situation of any number one pick ever, or number one overall pick ever, and then to see it turn out pretty very comparable to a lot of other terrible teams that a number one overall pick has gone to. So I think right now, I think they're balancing those two things, the positive side of it and the negative side of it are kind of balancing each other out. And I think with some of these openings coming available, Jacksonville, is that a more appealing job with Trevor Lawrence? You look at the Giants, if they fire Brian Daboll, I'm at this point now where the top of the market coaches, whether it's Ben Johnson or Pete Carroll or Mike Vrabel or whoever it may be, I'm wondering how interested they are in coming into this division with Matt LaFleur, Dan Campbell, and Kevin O'Connell roaming the sidelines for possibly the next decade in the NFC North.
I wouldn't want to come here. You're about to go 0-6 against those three teams. Are you telling me you can win three of those games next year with just because you have a new coach and hopefully a little bit better of an offensive line? But there's a lot of work to be done on the offensive line, defensive line, and not a lot of like great free agents. Offensive line, you can't use all your draft picks on the offensive line, but you potentially could have four new starters on the offensive line. And you're just going to tell me like, yep, good against the division, all good. Ben Johnson's here, whoop-de-doo. Like, I don't see it. You have the quarterback, right? I think no one is sitting here saying that the quarterback can't be great, but the quarterback needs a lot of work. It's going to be a brand new offense. He couldn't get this cadence down. Why is he going to have the next cadence down by week 18? I'm just saying, I think there's a lot of work to be done, and the Jacksonville job in that division with a quarterback, small market, not a lot of pressure. I mean, the microscope is on. You're the head coach of the Chicago Bears. All eyes on you, babe. Like, it is Bears.
Bears.
Bears. And I'm watching these games over the weekend. Vikings, Green Bay, Detroit with a defense that is so banged up. And they go to San Francisco in a meaningless game. And they win, like flexing their muscles win. Good luck to whoever takes this job. And I want to get to this too, but don't come into this saying we're going to the Super Bowl. Take the North. This is the best situation for a quarterback. Manage expectations, for goodness gracious.
There we go.
Like, manage them. Control the narrative. What is the messaging? Like, these are things that the Bears organizations from the top down have failed at this season. And you need to be able to control the messaging and manage expectations, because God forbid you surprise us.
Those are the unanswerable questions.
All right, let's transition to the Bulls for just a second. With them grinding out an overtime win against Charlotte, they've shown the fight to potentially secure a play-in spot. How does the team balance competing for wins with the possibility that the organization might prefer a higher draft pick over a play-in appearance?
Okay, I'm glad I get to start this one off because it actually ties into the Bears. I know we were trying to take a break. Bears, take notes. Billy Donovan started this season being like, this is going to be rough. Like, this is a developmental year. We're young. We're going to grow players. We're going to be bad on defense. Like, this is going to be tough. And I love that we are being a little bit, we're surprised to see this relative success from this team. Like, that's fun to be surprised. I know you're managing the wins here, right? Like, how do you prioritize winning over what it could mean in the future? Playing well right now at this point in the season, that's good for wanting to trade some of these guys. Like, keep winning so their value goes up. And then if you get rid of some of the stars, that kind of helps you lose, maybe, down the stretch.
Just a little bit.
So, listen, I think it's fun to watch right now, and I think it's cool to see guys like Vooch and Zach and Kobe and you know, even these bench guys coming in. Torrey Craig, like, what? Coming in last night and having a game. Javon Carter. Like, these guys are coming in and playing well, and it's fun, but I think everyone's sort of sitting there like, wait. It's like that meme of the little kid who's like getting interviewed and he's like laughing but like trying not to cry. He's like, you know, that's kind of what it's like watching the Bulls right now. But listen, for now, it's okay to win.
For now, right? Like, eventually, I'm concerned that they're going to keep playing at this near 500 pace, and they're going to see people in the stands. And that dinner theater crowd we're talking about, Gabe, don't want to lose that dinner theater crowd if they trade away Zach LaVine and Vooch and they really hit a skid and start losing night after night. Would that affect the crowd? That's my concern at the deadline, if that would affect whether they would trade those players. But I think right now you guys are right. They're playing an exciting brand of basketball. The question is, at what point do you start trading away players of value who have built some value like Vooch and like Zach LaVine have to start this season? But the other problem, guys, the Eastern Conference sucks. There are so many terrible teams, and you have to really, so you got to really get a jump on losing if you want to secure being in that top 10, which they have that top 10 protected or unprotected pick.
Yeah, I the issue with the Bulls is that they are a deep team. Oddly, like when you're looking at the Charlotte Hornets yesterday, my God, their bench, like we could play a game like, I don't know, rapper or basketball player if I told you these names, like KJ Simpson, Isaiah Wong, Daquan Jeffries.
Isaiah Wong,
Nick
Miami
Richards.
Guy.
Richards. I mean, these guys, I mean, you know what I'm saying, compared to the Bulls, yeah, who have actual professional NBA players, Lonzo Ball, Torrey Craig, Taylor Horton Tucker, Jalen Smith, Matis Buzelis. I mean, these are guys that play. Chris Duarte just put up 27 in the G League the other day, right? So the Bulls need to do more to dismantle this team if they want to get themselves out of this play-in situation, which, geez, I hope that they do. You know how many threes the Bulls put up yesterday? 60. 60 threes. This is a team that ranked at the very bottom the last two seasons of the NBA. 63. I watch a lot of NBA. 60 three-pointers is outrageous. What did the kids say? That is diabolical work right there to be doing something like that. So you got to get rid of Zach LaVine. You got to get rid of, you know, Vooch. The problem is the guys that they're talking about getting back. Michael Porter Jr. is good. And on a team where he's going to get the green light, he's going to want to play. He's going to want to be like a better Kyle Kuzma, right? Like, you're going to get guys that can score buckets. You need to not get guys like that. You need expiring contracts, guys you're going to get rid of, people that do not want to play in order so you can find yourself into that Cooper Flag race, which is where you should be. But no one thought that the Bulls, without DeMar DeRozan, with the healthy Zach LaVine, with the Lonzo Ball coming back, that they were going to be able to find themselves in the play-in situation. I know even the Bulls organization thought they were going to sink just a bit. That's why they got to get rid of these guys ASAP, and hopefully they do that before this thing turns around. All right, We will be talking about, hopefully, Bulls some point throughout the show. But coming up next, we have the extra point. I am Gabe Ramirez. She is Ruthie Polinsky from Chicago Sports Network. And the pick six has to do with the general manager of the Chicago Bears and whether or not he deserves an extension. We will discuss that on the other side. Again, Ramirez and Polinsky filling in for Mullion Hall right here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the extra point with Mullion Hall on 670 The Score.
All right, guys. Albert Breer reports that Ryan Poles will be leading the coaching search with Kevin Warren at the table. That was at the table in air quotes. Does this track with the reporting of a potential Ryan Poles extension? Is that necessary?
There were a lot of nuggets in that Albert Breer report yesterday. Someone's talking to him. So, I mean, there's a lot to be taken from what Albert Breer says and reports. I thought that was really interesting to sort of clarify. Someone wanted to clarify who is running this search, and it's Ryan Poles. Like, that's what I took away from that article. For Kevin Warren to have a seat at the table and to have a voice is giving him sort of the sit down, Kevin Warren. This is Ryan's role, which is fascinating to me. Like, who is dictating this, like, hierarchy? Like,
Virginia. Virginia's sitting there in the back, you know.
Virginia's, listen, God bless her. I mean, she is still kicking, but what I'm saying is the fact that Ryan, the reporting of Ryan Poles potentially getting an extension, to me just feels unnecessary. I understand that there was the word I think Albert Breer used was alignment with the head coach in terms of their contract structure was kind of what I took away from that. To me, that just feels unnecessary. If Ryan Poles makes a hire, and we don't know how much time is left on Ryan's contract. We don't know if he and Matt Eberflus had the same sort of alignment, and now who knows? But to me, it's why not? Why give that to him now? But at the same time, if you want to, sure, you could still fire him if it doesn't go well.
Right, which is exactly to your point. Why?
Right.
So do you think that them giving an extension to Ryan Poles is going to make coaching candidates around the league say, oh, you know what? That's it. The Bears have their crap together.
Right.
This situation is great.
Right.
Like, there's continuity now and there's no dysfunction. I just don't understand the thought process there. Like, is our coaches around the league seeing that and making a decision based on, oh, well, Ryan Poles back? As far as him making the decision in the coaching search, theoretically, you want your football person to be making that decision, but like, we're in this situation where there are three parties. You have the McCaskies, you have Kevin Warren, and you have Ryan Poles, and nobody knows who they would rather have running the search. So, like I said, theoretically, you want your football person doing it, so I guess that's a small win, but as far as Ryan Poles' extension talk, I don't understand how that helps the Bears at all.
Yeah, I think, listen, if you're a head coach coming into a situation, you're going to be fearful that the GM gets fired, a new one comes in and wants their head coach, right? I mean, I think that to me is that at the core of that. The Athletic's Adam Johns reported back in the early December that Ryan Poles' contract is only for 4 years, expiring after the 2025 season. Oof. So, I mean, extension, I get it. I get the alignment part. If you're the Bears and you brought in Ryan Poles, maybe Virginia McCaskey likes what he's done so far, right? We as critics say, you know, it's 50-50. And Virginia's like, nah, I like what he's done. He's changed things around here. I want him to be at the helm. I mean, that's the only thing you could possibly think of in that situation. Him being at the table, like the whole power dynamic has been interesting for the Chicago Bears, right? Ryan Poles comes in the beginning and he feels he has free reign to do whatever he wants. I'm the GM. I run the show. I'm Ryan Poles. I cook things up. I wear a hat. Then Kevin Warren comes in and he's like, hey, I'm a spectator. I'm a fly on the wall. Ryan Poles, you do your thing. When he misses on Claypool, they tell him, hey, keep swinging. Don't worry about it, right? Then the Bears start to lose and then all of a sudden, the power dynamic starts to shift just a little bit, where it's like Ryan Poles loses some, Kevin Warren gains some, and then that's why everyone was curious, like, what is going on? What is this hierarchy? What does this totem pole look like? And now we get a better glimpse of it. I mean, listen, I think for all Bears fans, we can try to talk trash as much as we want. But you better hope that Ryan Poles gets it right. You better be cheering on Ryan Poles.
Right.
You better be rah-rahing for him, say, yeah, I hope he does a great job instead of this isn't the guy. He should get fired. No, it's too late. He's here.
It's very clear that Ryan Poles is going to be evaluated on this next hire.
Yes.
It's going to take time to find out if this next hire works. He's not being in this offseason. He's not being graded on the roster right now. He's not being graded on Nate Davis failing or Chase Claypool failing or trading away Roquan Smith. He is being evaluated on his hiring. And I think it's very clear that there is probably some thin ice because of the failure of the hiring so far, but it's still kind of unclear how much say Ryan Poles had in hiring Matt Eberflus to begin with, because they were hired 2 days apart. So I just think this is going to be, if Ben Johnson comes in here and says, you have to give Ryan Poles an extension because I don't want him to get fired next year and a new GM come in and then fire me, you could give Ryan Poles a 2-year extension. Yeah. And then if you fire him, you fire. To me, it's like, play the game, get the right head coach in here, and figure the rest out later.
Should be that.
I got a question for both of you. Do you think Ryan Poles will get an extension?
Well, that's the question. Hold on. Don't answer that. That's the question that I want to ask. You in the car listening, Ruthie and I can give us the answer on the other side. 312-644-6767. Do you feel that the current general manager of the Chicago Bears, Ryan Poles, deserves an extension? Yay or nay? We will answer the question on the other side as well. All right. She is CHSN's very own Ruthie Polinsky. I am Gabe Ramirez, filling in for Mully and Haw. We'll get to that question next right here on The Score.
Mornings with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Gabe Ramirez, along with Ruthie Polinsky, right here on 670 The Score, filling in for Mully and Haw. Let's go out to the phones. Let's go to Tony and Joliet. Tony, we were talking about Ryan Poles and potentially getting an extension. Do you think he deserves one?
Absolutely not. I've been a Bears fan my whole life, 50 years. I haven't seen anything like it. You're talking about the guy who had more loyalty to Armstrong, the agent, than he did the Bears. So when you put your ducks in that, you got to sit with it. The guy hired Waldron. He was part of it. And Waldron was the biggest reason why Caleb's having all these problems. I don't understand why this is even a conversation. He has made numerous mistakes. I don't trust Warren at all either. I think he's afraid to let him go, because I think he's actually like a blanket for Warren, because I don't really think he understands that other side at all.
Yeah, it's difficult when you're talking about it. I mean, listen, it's hard for you to create a case for him to get an extension, right? I mean, when you're looking at everything that's happened and transpired, including roster construction, this stuff. Let's go to John out in Aurora. John, should, in your eyes, Ryan Poles get an extension?
Definitely not. Let's just look through what he has started off with. He first started off with hiring Eberflus. Epic mistake. And then he, compounded by everybody getting fired and not firing the coach. He had multiple times to hire actual good coaches and skipped over it for this clown. He, like the last caller said, Waldron, epic mistake. But another epic mistake they didn't surround Caleb with an experienced quarterback to show him how to, go through the NFL, prepare and do all that stuff. And now there's reports that this guy isn't doing everything properly. There's the fact that he signed Cairo Santos to a massive extension. The guy can't kick over 55 yards. So what if he would have been able to kick a 57-yarder last week? We could have tied. The Bears could have tied the game. But we're hamstrung. The Bears are hamstrung with that contract as kicker. He spent 2 draft picks in 3 years on punters. Okay, he's had 29 picks. He's maybe hit on 9 of them. Okay, that is not a good ratio for somebody who is building through the draft, where he also can't draft wide receivers because he had drafted Velus Jones. Screw up Velus Jones, trades for Claypool, screws that up.
But right? he did get Roma Dunze, and I think a lot of people are happy about that.
Can I just chime in there on the special teams hate? First of all, Cairo Santos, I know this is an interesting number that I found out this week. The Cairo Santos criticism, I think, is so valid, but I will give you this number. There are only 6 kickers in the NFL that have kicked a field goal outdoors that's been 58 or 58 yards or more.
Oh, okay.
This year, only six. There are 13 total that have kicked a 58 yarder or greater this year, which I think is indoor outdoor. So the Cairo Santos, he's middle of the road in terms of his leg. I think the trajectory and all that, that's all valid. He's the most accurate kicker in Bears history. It's hard to criticize. And also, Torrey Taylor, MVP of this season. And you can see how he has completely changed the course of the season. He has literally single-handedly kept the Bears in games in some of these games early, you know, when they were in these one-score games.
Yeah, I will take accuracy over distance for a Chicago Bears team that plays outdoors. Certainly need that.
Don't hate on Torrey Taylor. I love that. Love that guy.
Well, we can talk about that during the break. All right, coming up next, we get a chance to talk to Brad Biggs and ask him if Ryan Poles deserves an extension or not. We'll do that on the other side. We'll also be joining the CHSN broadcast, so make sure you check us out there if you're headed inside the house. All right, it's Gabe Ramirez. It is Ruthie Polinsky filling in for Mully and Hall right here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.